Chris, and welcome to another episode of Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem, where each episode we bring on experts to spread the word about and discuss a different facet of the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem, one of the largest nearly intact temperate zone ecosystems on Earth. My name is Eden Wandra, and I'll be your host today, and I'm excited to bring on three members of a local group called Red Lodge Dark Skies. Now, you might have been surprised to see this title. What do dark skies have to do with animals, you might be asking? Well, hang in there and you will find out. But first, let's introduce our guests. Jeremy, would you like to go first? Can you introduce yourself a little bit and explain what your role is in Red Lodge Dark Skies?
Sure. So I've lived in Red Lodge since about 2009, and I became involved in Red Lodge Dark Skies right around summer of 2021. And that was kind of coincident with taking up the hobby of astrophotography. And so when I heard about a group that was meeting to discuss lighting regulations and really address light pollution in our area, I definitely wanted to attend. And so eventually we formed a group called Red Lodge Dark Skies. And I'm currently the chair of this group. And our mission is to preserve the excellent skies that Red Lodge has. On a scale of 1 to 10, there's a particular scale called the Bortle scale. We are right around a 3 to 4, which is really excellent. Most people in the world live in a city and it's right around Bortle 8, and you really can't even make out the Milky Way. So we really have skies worth preserving here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. Yeah. Thank you, Jeremy. Joanne, would you like to go next?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm an astronomer, and I fell in love with the night sky when I was 8 years old, and it inspired me to want to go on in science and to want to find out what was happening up there. And aesthetically, it's really beautiful, but to me, it was just awe-inspiring and thinking about big questions. What's the beginning of the universe? And I know so many kids that are inspired by the same thing, and adults too. But preserving the dark skies, the quality that we have here, which is really exceptional. If you go up on the bench, it is amazing how dark our skies are. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. Mm-hmm. We do a pretty good job so far of shielding, and so it's an incredible resource. And I also want to add that I'm president of the OP&W Edwards Foundation, and we have partnered with Yellowstone Park in some of their efforts to preserve their dark skies because they think it's one of their greatest ecological features.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm glad they're recognizing that. And the OPE and WE Edwards Foundation is also what funds the education program here at the Yellowstone Wildlife Sanctuary, which is how we produce this podcast. So you also brought to us this podcast, so thank you for that. Yes, and Teresa?
So my role with RLDS really started out as a beg to help facilitate and organize. At first, it was a call into Courtney. And then before I knew it, they were trying to get together. Other people became interested. Joan Gerlanek or Girlnick was going to host it at her house at first. And it was such a hot day in July that we ended up meeting its heroes. And it's kind of been housed and facilitated there ever since. Mm-hmm. So we nominated Jeremy to be our chair this past, was it January, February?
Mm-hmm. Somewhere there.
Yeah. So up until then, what became my role was really by the introduction of the idea and then having to host it. But I grew to appreciate so greatly what this group could do and what it means to Red Lodge. And now today it's very intertwined with Hero's mission to, you know, for STEAM education as well as the new Whistler Observatory. So I'm never leaving RLDS.
Apparently. That's great to hear. Good. Okay. Would any of you like to outline a little bit what the goals are of Red Lodge Dark Skies?
You want to go first, Teresa?
No, you go ahead. You started in on it, the protection and preservation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we like I said, we really have excellent skies here. And so what's involved in keeping them that way is just public education, for one. So our group focuses on, engaging with the public by hosting star parties to really showcase our excellent skies. Once people see what it is we're protecting, it's second nature to do the right thing, which is, to install and use lighting appropriately. And so we educate on the 5 lighting principles, and they're really basic. Make sure it's useful. If it's not doing anything, turn it off. Mm-hmm. Make sure it's targeted, so, you don't want the light spilling out into a place where it's not needed, like the sky. And you want to make it as low level as possible and really control your light. So you could have motion sensors, you could put them on timers. There's a lot of different technologies these days that make appropriate lighting easy to do and, something that anyone can do with their lighting. It's just a matter of being conscious, being aware of what you're doing with your light.
Right. Any other goals?
Yeah, so as far as the goals of the initial group that have been carried forward and sort of evolved, mm-hmm. our original discussion was around whether or not as becoming a dark skies designated place, we would be a city, or which would be our community, or the larger community, including the county. And at that first meeting, we decided we would focus on the city, and that it was too big a elephant mm-hmm. to chew on to, take on the whole county at once. And then since we got our feedback about the lighting regulations that we were instrumental in changing for the city, the feedback didn't, we made the changes, but it wasn't really a fit for our smaller rural community. I think Dark Skies has in mind larger cities, right. Multiple curfews, and a lot of things that we really don't have control of. Or that would be distasteful to the residents of Red Lodge. So the thing is, we've evolved, and I think our role has slightly changed into more of the educational focus while we're working on the longer, targets. But just communicating and educating the community, talking to our neighbors one-on-one and trying to get them to understand what we're about and how they might be helpful in improving their lighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We have to start there. Get us all on the same page. Sorry, our coyotes are going a little crazy in the background right now. Okay, I'd like to back up a little bit because I think the origins of Red Lodge Dark Skies have a meaningful history. Teresa, would you like to share that with us a little bit about how, sure. where the idea sure. of Red Lodge Dark Skies first started?
I had many thoughts. think of Joni Mitchell and the big, Yellow Taxi? Mm-hmm. paved it over and put up a parking mm-hmm. lot, right? Put the trees in the museum. We're doing the same thing to our skies. We're doing the same thing to our nighttime skies. And this was an opportunity that came from outside the city, unless someone else knows who put someone up to it. The story that I observed and was part of was that call into Courtney Long from a woman in Billings.
Who was our city planner, by the way. Mm-hmm.
Yes, she was our city planning assistant at the time.
Oh, that's right.
And she was helpful in trying to reach out to different community members to try to see who this woman might talk to, because she knew the city couldn't take it on. Parks Board was given a proposal and an opportunity to participate. Nothing was able to evolve out of that because they were busy with the City Nature Challenge at the time and all, the parks cleanup and all kinds mm-hmm. of things like Earth Day. So eventually, we had an opportunity to meet, like I said earlier, mm-hmm. with Joan taking the lead to host us, and then that turning over to Heroes just because of the weather and no air conditioning in Red Lodge. And then we decided at that committee meeting that we would focus on the regulations first, lighting regulations. And that's how we kind of parted ways again until that work was done. And Joanne was in there, Courtney was in there, Lisa Perry for Northwest Energy was in there, Corey was in there for mm-hmm. sustainability. So a small group of us you know, took on the task of working on those revisions. And then when we got back together in January of 2022, we got a whole new group of people and many, many more. So it was really exciting. But that's really how it was started. And then that I just want a little bit of a detour there. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think it was Judy, another woman from Billings, I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, was offering that she had a neighbor that wanted to donate a telescope to Red Lodge.
Right.
And didn't Red Lodge Darts guys, we were just starting. We couldn't own it. Where would we put it? Who would use it? So Heroes, because I was part of that meeting, offered to keep it and take it for both purposes of Heroes and Red Lodge Dark Skies. So that's how this whole thing got started around, well, we need an observatory.
For this telescope that we now have.
But that's my story. And if there's different inputs and recollections, you know, I certainly don't know about them.
Right. And Teresa runs the Heroes Steam Center, which is a science center in Red Lodge as well. That Red Lodge Dark Skies is a branch of. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that story. It's good to hear. Jeremy, you shared that you were really getting into dark skies because of your astrophotography. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Astrophotography.
Taking pictures of space.
Very cool. Very cool. Yep. Joanne, you shared a little bit of it growing up. Do any of you want to expand on that or add to what dark skies really mean to you? What the importance of it is to you personally?
For me, it's just an extension of enjoying nature, really. You know, we have a whole bevy of very talented wildlife and landscape photographers, artists, painters, naturalists, scientists, geologists. You know, there's a lot of smart people in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem in general. Mm-hmm. And over top of that is, you know, this grand tableau of stars, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I started out doing a little bit of landscape Milky Way photography, and then turns out if you zoom in a little bit, there's some interesting stuff up there. You've got galaxies, nebula, planets. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's been my journey, at least as a hobby goes, but just appreciating what is over our heads every single night is something that maybe a lot of people don't realize. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, it's a natural resource, just like our wildlife, just like our rivers.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I think of it.
Mm-hmm. And your photos are amazing because I love that your goal is kind of trying to show what you can actually see from Red Lodge. Mm-hmm. He takes all his photos from within Red Lodge city limits, and you can still see so much. And I think that might inspire people.
Yep. And with this observatory, that's going to really expand our ability to do that. We can house some equipment so we don't have to set it up every night in our backyard.
Right.
And it'll really enable people and other photographers to come out and appreciate. So.
Yeah, right. Do any of you want to add on?
Well, I think one thing about being able to see the rest of the universe is to get a perspective on our role in it. And people are, especially in cities, when they can barely see the moon half the time, they just think of themselves as tied to this planet. And to be able to look into the center of the galaxy that we live in. A lot of people don't even believe we live in a galaxy. You know, they've never seen it, they don't know. Mm-hmm. They have no evidence of it. And the concept that we're part of a solar system, much less a galaxy, is just, it just broadens your perspective, I think, of our place in the universe.
Absolutely. I think the statistic is 80% of people can't see the Milky Way from their
Or have never seen it.
Yeah.
Did you have anything more, Joanne? Okay. So for me, I'm listening to you, Joanne, and I have and like Jeremy, to me it is a basic connection with nature, but above that, it reminds me that we are more of a global community. And it's something bigger than all of us that we can share. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I'm so inspired by what's going on with JWST and all those other telescopes mm-hmm. out there now in space, and what we're learning mm-hmm. and the wonder of it all, and being able to look up at the sky mm-hmm. and see, you know, even if we're more limited than the telescopes that are out there, it's what we're learning, and it adds more value to being able to see it and just, mm-hmm. you know, enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's wonderful. And the other thing is, you know, I'm reminded that I've spent the first 2/3 of my life looking down.
Yes.
And blocked by buildings and work and kids mm-hmm. and all the other responsibilities we have. But I get to look up mm-hmm. the rest of my life mm-hmm. out here. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people over 65 out here that can now afford to look up. Look up and enjoy it. But, you know, start doing something different. And it's just wonderful.
Yeah, it is. I remember my first experience. I was having an asthma attack, and my mom was taking me to the hospital. And I remember looking out the window of the car and looking at the sky and the vastness and the beauty of it, and that's what calmed me and mm-hmm. brought my breathing back, and was able to calm my body. And ever since then, it has always been such a calming thing to me to go outside in the fresh air, look up at the night sky, be reminded of how small we are and how much more there is out there besides what's in our little bodies and our little minds. Yeah, so it's always been important to me as well. Here at the Yellowstone Wildlife Sanctuary, we got involved with dark skies because we started to learn how much it was affecting wildlife. Well, that light pollution was affecting wildlife. And because I, as the education manager, had this background and passion in it as well. The most common stories you usually hear about light affecting animals are often of stories of turtles. If you haven't heard about that, many baby turtles after hatching will use moonlight on the horizon to guide them to the water, the light reflecting on the water. But they have found that artificial lights from nearby cities and towns will actually draw them away from the ocean. And lights also discourage females from creating their nests in the first place. In Florida alone, millions of hatchlings have been dying this way every year. It's pretty crazy, and we have 7 species of sea turtles, and all of them are now endangered, which is wild. But there are so many other animals that are also affected by light pollution right now. For starters, if you just think about how many species are nocturnal, all those nocturnal species are being affected, which is all species of bats and badgers and most small carnivores, most rodents, 80% of marsupials and 20% of primates are all nocturnal. And then there are so many other species that are both active during the day and at night or at crepuscular times. So if you think about it, animals have been evolving for millions and millions of years, and they've been evolving alongside these light cycles and how they change throughout the year and the season. And the sudden onset of artificial light within the last 100-150 years is extremely having a big effect on them because they can't evolve, they can't adapt that quickly. So I could go on talking about that forever, but I do have a couple facts I'm just going to read off for you that are some surprising statistics about how animals are being affected around the world. So here are some highlights. There are 130 species of coral that spawn by moonlight. And so urban lights nearby on the shores are throwing off this biological cycle. And we know that coral are important for so many reasons. It's habitat for 25% of marine life and protects our coastlines. In a study with rats, artificial light at night was suppressing melatonin production, which is similar to what we've been finding happens in humans as well. And this resulted in an increase in tumors in rats. With songbirds, which is another one we hear about often, millions of them are drawn to the lights from buildings. So lights given off by buildings and also lights reflecting on windows from buildings around them. And these birds are dying from running into windows. So that's millions of birds a year. But that's an easy one to prevent, at least. You can hang up things in your windows and, of course, turn off your lights at night when you go to bed. And also bats, who are incredibly important for pollinating over 500 different species. And it has been noted that they currently save $1 billion a year in crop damage from eating pests, which is really crazy. Artificial light is obviously disrupting them in so many different ways. It disrupts their navigation, their roosting, because if lights are put up next to a roost, they will avoid that area. They're worried about predators being able to find them more easily, so they end up having to leave their roost. And it's, of course, affecting their feeding because insects are so severely impacted by light pollution. It's detrimental to many insect populations because it's acting like each artificial light, and you know, you can imagine millions of those all around in every city, is acting like a vacuum trap for all these insects. They get caught up in them. One study that just was taking one light source and put a moth trap under it to see how many moths were affected by that one light source in one night caught 50,000 moths in that one light trap, which is absolutely incredible amount of moths, which you could see how over time that would really impact the diversity of insects. And there hasn't been a lot of long-term studies on this yet, but there's major concern that this will be affecting insects, which of course affect humans, as insects are really important pollinators. Many are predators for other nuisance insects. They're food for many species. So this is becoming a big concern. In the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem specifically, we are a very important corridor area for wildlife. So the behavior that light pollution might affect the most in our area is migration. Do you all remember, we've talked about this before, what percent of birds migrate at nighttime?
I'm seeing 80%.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. 80%. This is something I didn't know about until I started working with Red Lodge Dark Skies, and I was just blown away. I didn't realize that. 80% migrate during night. It's most songbirds and waterfowl. So they are using moonlight and starlight to navigate, which is very cool. And light pollution, they've been finding, is actually causing them to wander off course. It has also been found that migratory birds depend on cues from properly timed seasonal schedules. So artificial light can cause them to migrate either too early or too late and miss that ideal climate condition for their nesting, for foraging, and other behaviors, which can cause them to breed too early, since they associate breeding with longer days. Many species use that to know when it's breeding time, like including salamanders and many other species. So I also read that artificial light can trap migratory birds by bleaching their visual pigments, causing them to lose sight of the horizon and circle within that cone of the light, which is really crazy. Study that was done, especially near birds that lived near water. And then they can end up dying from exhaustion or collision with the light source. So this can be extended to diurnal species of songbirds as well, making them more susceptible to predators as they were singing out their location. They were drawing in predators to their area. Anyway, all of this I know is really sad and really dark. And this is without even going into the negative health effects light pollution has on humans, including an increased risk of obesity, sleep disorders, diabetes, and breast cancer. It is scary. It's very concerning. It's just another way humans are affecting the others around us. But one of my favorite reasons to talk about light pollution and talk about this conservation concern is that it is one that we can actually quickly make reversible. It's something we can do as individuals, which is sometimes hard to feel like we can actually have the power to do something about. So my next question to you all, and I know, Jeremy, you talked about it a little bit, those 5 points that we try to encourage. Maybe if we could take a second to review those, of what things people could do to reduce their light pollution. We could hit those points for local people to know what they can do with their lights, how they can change them to help. And if you're like a business owner, how you can get involved, and what we're encouraging as Red Large Dark Skies for our community to kind of do and change, what we would like them to change.
Yeah, so you can look at kind of the lowest hanging fruit, the worst offenders. You know, when you said business owners, that made me think of there's some advertising signage with spotlights angled up at the sign. Mm-hmm. And though that is possibly the worst possible orientation, it's, you know, it's flooding up into the sky. It's, you know, it's not directed at just what you need it to. You know, so if you happen to be a business owner with a sign like that, you might think about installing a fixture that angles downward, you know, installed from the top, angled downward at your sign, only as bright as it needs to be. And maybe even think about not having a lighted sign at all, whether you really need that. Mm-hmm. If you're a homeowner, or even if you just have an apartment, you know, turning off your porch light when you're not using it, super easy. Mm-hmm. You know, if you own your home or you have the ability, you can install fixtures that have shielding on the top, and that's ideal. So really just turn it off when you need it, only as bright as it needs to be, and shielded if it can. And just those three steps, you know, can really make a huge difference. Here locally, we have some storage units north of town, which initially were very, very bright. But they installed some shielding, and it reduced the glare up into the sky, I would guess, by something like 80%. It's much better.
Yeah, it made a huge difference.
Yeah. So you can make a difference even if you want to keep your lighting. It's not, you know, there's a misconception that it's, you know, we just want everyone to turn their lights off, or we're anti-light. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, just appropriate light is what we're going for. Mm-hmm. And so when we bring people out to the observatory or for stargazing, you know, you really get a sense of what the point is. Mm-hmm. And it's a good reminder of, you know, why you should do those things.
Right. Yeah.
I want to add one thing, because it amazed me when I first got involved with Dark Skies and we started looking at these things. And that's the color that you choose for your light bulbs can make a huge amount of difference. Mm-hmm. So Dark Sky Principles ask that you use warmer colored lights. Mm-hmm. And that's so easy to do, you know, just change the kind of light bulb you're using. Right. And I really want to shout out to Northwest Energy, because they are being very thoughtful about that. And they're very thoughtful about their shielding. So again, if you go up on one of the benches and look down on Red Lodge, there's really, I mean, those streetlights drive me crazy because it's shining right in my window.
You're underneath them.
But I'm underneath them. But if you go up on the bench, and with me, even if I just walk up the hill a little bit behind my house, it's totally dark. All the light is directed down. Yeah, and so it's simple to do. And I really appreciate Northwest Energy's commitment to doing that with all the lights that they've replaced. Everything they have power to do, which is not the main street lights. Yeah. But.
And they were very helpful while we were coming up with our standards.
Yeah, they had the engineers actually measure different fixtures make sure that they were the proper spectrum.
Yeah, we hear a lot of, we hear a lot of people voicing their concerns over, you know, this is going to be a huge expense, and I wouldn't even know what to put in. But a lot of the lighting has been mainstreamed in big box stores. Mm-hmm. And if you just search, for instance, you go to Lowe's or Home Depot and search Dark Skies Lighting, there's like 700 choices under, I think it's Lowe's and then not far behind is Home Depot, but it's becoming more and more a common practice, and people are becoming more aware of the fully shielded lighting and using warm lights instead of bright white or the blue lights. So it's very easy to do that. As you replace a fixture, just be, you know, maybe selective in what you're purchasing and installing, mm-hmm. or if you're developing something new or adding on a new structure, an ADU or whatever on your property, it's a perfect time to put in the right kind of lighting. Mm-hmm. So we're not asking people to shut off the lights or not use lights. And I mm-hmm. think there is an initial reaction from the community that there's going to be danger and, you mm-hmm. know, security issues and safety issues. Mm-hmm. But it's when it's like when somebody shines a flashlight in your eyes. Can you see anything? No. When your neighbor has their floodlights directed straight at your house mm-hmm. and coming in all your windows, can you see? I mean, are you going to jump up every time that comes on and look outside to see what's happening? I better call my neighbor that's not living here. That's the kind of thing. Just be aware, mm-hmm. right? And if you have an opportunity and the time is right when you're replacing something, then pick some dark sky compliant lighting. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, we all love the holiday lights, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just as simple to pick out a string of warm whites mm-hmm. and not the bright yes. white lights. Yes. So, yeah, even if you leave them up year round, like some people do, because they like the atmosphere, it's warm whites are so much better for everybody.
Yes, so. Yeah, including wildlife. That red light is just way less intrusive than bright blue lights. It has something to do with the wavelengths.
Yeah, and the only other thing I think we've become more aware of because of our stargazing activities is that people, of course, that move here and have beautiful homes here have huge plate glass windows so they can enjoy the views of the mountains and mm-hmm. and the landscape. But then don't put up shading or any type of closures for those windows at mm-hmm. night. And that would be helpful. Just, you know, if you're going to turn on all your lights at night, at least draw the shades, close the curtains, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. It might even cut off on the number of Murphy moths or whatever those mm-hmm. moths are that everybody complains about are flocking into yes. their homes, mm-hmm. crawling under the windows. So they're trying to get at the light, right?
Miller moths.
Yep. I'm thinking of Murphy's Law. Those right. moths are coming. Those moths are coming.
Whatever moth can will happen.
It will. But the Miller moths, I mean, that's probably related too, yeah, to the light at night. They're, get in there. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things, little things people mm-hmm. can do. And it doesn't have to be the whole household and every structure out mm-hmm. there, but just whatever they can do incrementally.
Yeah. And it's actually been proven that the increased lights doesn't decrease crime, that they weren't related, which was a crazy stat that I found. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Motion detector lights, red lights versus blue lights are very helpful. What are some Red Lodge Dark Skies accomplishments so far? What are some things you all are proud of that you have created and achieved?
Well, I might have Teresa give us some details on it, but Red Lodge Dark Skies was instrumental in getting some zoning regulations in that address lighting in an appropriate, smart way. Mm-hmm. And more communities are doing this. It's not something that we're going it alone on. There's plenty of examples to go by, and some places are doing it better than we are, and we can make improvements everywhere we can. So mm-hmm. that's kind of one of our highlights.
So I think the other thing is, yes, that was the bigger lift, but with that feedback that we got from was Ashley as our advocate for the mm-hmm. submission of our new mm-hmm. regulations. We got a lot of feedback, and we were able to get together again. It was Joanne and me and Scott mm-hmm. Hancock, mm-hmm. and we went through all of that and realized some of the gaps that we missed. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, the city should be complying with its own city lighting ordinances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know that wasn't happening. But some of those changes are going to make cause cost, which we can't really control and manage right mm-hmm. now or immediately. So we have those parked on the side and ready to go when we feel like we can bring those back, you know, having been just, you know, gone through that first push, timing is probably everything on when we reintroduce additional improvements based on that feedback, mm-hmm. along with outdoor advertising. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I think Germany's point of education is where we've really made huge inroads. Mm-hmm. And as Teresa said, so many people now are coming to the meetings. Mm-hmm. They really care about it. There are a lot of new people, mm-hmm. and they're just amazed at our dark skies, and they are so committed to helping to preserve them, because that's why they chose to come here and live.
Right.
So,
right.
And then all the collaborations we've done with the Wildlife Sanctuary, mm-hmm. to have, mm-hmm. dark sky nights, mm-hmm. and to show how it's part of the whole ecology. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, they're not separate issues. They're all one, right. issue of preserving the ecology that we have here. The greater Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm. And I like to think about the future too. Mm-hmm. I have been secretly planting a seed with the chamber, mm-hmm. to push, you know, the opportunity to educate. I would love for the businesses and event organizers and the community at large, mm-hmm. to understand the opportunity we have here. By just saving one of the greatest assets we have, preserving, mm-hmm. the asset of our dark sky, how much that can bring to our own local economy and enrich, mm-hmm. the tourism out here. Mm-hmm. Astro tourism. Mm-hmm. I had even mocked up a little, Red Lodge invites you to astro stay, you know, do this, mm-hmm. and do that, and visit, mm-hmm. the observatory and make, mm-hmm. your own planisphere and, mm-hmm. check out a telescope. There's, you know, bars and restaurants could name drinks and platters or food after
the Saturn, you know,
there's
special.
There's so many things that we could do. And guess what? If there's no snow, there's still stars.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm hopeful that this will help us become even more connected with the, mm-hmm. community.
Yeah, me too. That was actually my next question, was what were you excited about next for doing?
Oh, there you go. Right.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Jeremy, any big dreams for you for Red Lodge Dark Skies?
Well, I think, you know, people don't know what they don't know. And so when they really come face to face with, you know, their first encounter with wildlife, if they've been to the park or, you know, or our dark skies, you know, I feel like it's the same thing. It really, that's something people will remember, and that's what will spur thoughtfulness in the future, mm-hmm. And a mindfulness towards both wildlife, mm-hmm. and the natural environment in general, which includes the dark skies. Mm-hmm. So I feel like those showcase moments where they can meet wildlife, like here at the Wildlife Sanctuary, mm-hmm. or up at the observatory when they can see the rings of Saturn with their own eyes, mm-hmm. That's something that anybody from all ages is going to remember. And so that's what I'm looking forward to, particularly with the observatory. I feel like it's just a good spot to, mm-hmm. you know, showcase that natural wonder. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, we didn't even bring up the observatory as an accomplishment. Yeah. That was a huge accomplishment last year. That was finally achieved after many challenges. Mm-hmm. But it is in place now and will be used upcoming this year for many wonderful events, which we'll talk about a little bit towards the end of the podcast. Mm-hmm. My next question was, if someone is listening and they're really excited about trying to protect their area, that their community that they live in, what did you all learn from the process? Although we didn't quite continue that. What did you all learn from the process of becoming a certified dark sky area and trying to protect your community?
Joanne's looking at me. Well, for me, it was first educating myself to, mm-hmm. know what this was all about, and then trying to refine through time based on other people's reactions what is better to say or how to communicate it better and educate, because that's really what it comes down to, is just talking to people and, mm-hmm. making them aware. I was completely unaware. Mm-hmm. I still have one of those little tiny clear canister lights that's putting light out all over it because that's the way I bought the house, right? Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. and so now I just never turn that light on. I guess understanding what it is to be, mm-hmm. a dark sky community and what, mm-hmm. dark skies is about before reacting to it, and, mm-hmm. and trying to keep an open mind, but my role in aiding that and, mm-hmm. educating, trying, mm-hmm. to share that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I think visiting areas that have done a mm-hmm. good job. I keep thinking of the Old Faithful area at Yellowstone, mm-hmm. and they put so much effort, and they partnered with General Electric and designed their own light fixtures, mm-hmm. and it's totally safe. They have their parking lots beautifully illuminated, and there's light wherever you need it. Every pathway is perfectly safe.
You can
safe.
See a bear if it's coming.
And you can see a bear if it's coming. That's perfect.
Safe from bears.
But to see that it's not a safety issue, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. really possible to do it right and mm-hmm. to have everything illuminated that you need illuminated.
Yes.
Without disrupting the dark skies.
And there was even a city. What city is it that was able to be a fully dark sky city?
Oh, Tucson, right?
Tucson.
Took the lead.
Okay, yeah. Tucson, that's
Tucson
inspiring.
Is where, yeah, and then it was news to me. We recently mm-hmm. learned that all of Park County in Idaho, which is mm-hmm. Driggs and National Targhee and other wow. communities, they have at a countywide level
wow.
all of these dark sky compliant wow. regulations.
Wow.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we can,
it's possible.
That inspires me to mm-hmm. continue on here and mm-hmm. say, well, if they can do it. And they're dependent on tourism, mm-hmm. you know, and ag, but sort of similar to we are mm-hmm. on the other side of the... Mm-hmm. on the mountains.
yeah.
That's definitely been an inspirational part is that, you know, wherever you live, there's some community like yours doing it right.
That's a good one.
And, you know, currently Moab is applying for international mm-hmm. dark sky status, and they're very similar to Red Lodge, mm-hmm. similar size, tourism economy, surrounded by nature. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's inspiring to me to see the, you know, just to see other communities making the effort, mm-hmm. You know, because it is a collaborative thing. You know, we're all on one little globe in the vast expanse.
One little blue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes.
One more thing I just thought of, and that's citizen science. Mm-hmm. There's so many opportunities for everyday citizens to just go in their backyard and keep track of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And especially just with small telescopes, they can find brand new binary mm-hmm. systems. They could discover a supernova. Mm-hmm. I mean, think how exciting mm-hmm. that is yes. to just be able to go in your own backyard and contribute to science.
Good mm-hmm. plug. And then yes. for citizen science, mm-hmm. It reminded me, we do have the Starry Sky Kit. Mm-hmm. And that's been on loan to us from the Montana Learning Center. Mm-hmm. People can check it out. It's meant for youth, so they could go out in their own backyard and throw up the little meter mm-hmm. and measure the darkness of our sky mm-hmm. and send that data in to the Montana Learning Center for the statewide cumulative data set of how dark
so cool.
are the Montana
yeah.
skies. And, you know, it just reminds me when you ride into Billings, there's a big, mm-hmm. huge post billboard that says, Montana, a million good reasons to visit. And it's all these stars. Right? So, and that's headed into Billings. I think that ought to be kind of facing this way, headed out here.
True. Yeah. And they can check that out from the library here, or is that at Heroes?
It's at Heroes.
No. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. We'll include some links in the show notes for different citizen science projects people can get involved with. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. I'll give you an opportunity to plug Red Lodge Dark Skies a little bit and what events you all have going on this year, what the schedule looks like up at the observatory. If people want to, are getting really excited from this podcast and they want to start and get involved and come out to some of our events, what are some things they should look forward to this year?
Well, the observatory has kind of an open schedule of the weekends, Friday, Saturday, before each new moon. Mm-hmm. So that's something you can look up. The roof slides off. We have telescopes available for people to use. And then we'll have, you know, special dates and occasions throughout the year. So we like to do... Teresa's giving me our
list,
sheet here.
List.
So let's see. So the ribbon cutting for the observatory, the Whistler Observatory, is April 14th. That's kind of our next big thing. So come out to that. And for any of this information, you can go to heroessteam.org and look those dates up. There's also Zoo Montana is having an Earth Day, and Red Ledge Dark Skies will have a table there. That's on April 20th. There's a speaker series at here at the Wildlife Sanctuary on the 21st, the next day. We'll be having a nature walk at Van Dyke Park, which I'm excited about, with Doug Reynolds with Stargazing following on May 3rd.
Oh, cool.
And then as we go throughout the year, we're going to be partnering with the Yellowstone Valley Astronomy Association. Last year, we hosted a star party up at Vista Point, which is just outside of Red Lodge, and in terms of sky quality, up there is like Bortle 1. There is no artificial light at all, and you're up at 10,000 feet, so there's less atmosphere to look through. It's really incredible. So look out for a date for that. It'll probably be somewhere in July.
And then closest to us, we have a History of the Universe presentation with Greg Bach. And that will coincide with or be followed up by stargazing on the vernal equinox, because Eden would not let us let that go.
Yes.
We'll open on that night. I think it's a Wednesday.
Yes. And
we'll have some star hopping and stargazing
March
on that
20th.
Night. Yep, to celebrate that.
Yes. Oh, wonderful. Great. Thank you for sharing that. And if people want to be involved with the Red Lodge Dark Skies group, what should they do if they want to help out with these events or be a volunteer?
Our Facebook page is very active. If you just search for Red Lodge Dark Skies on Facebook, you can find us. Like I said, there's heroessteam.org, and
we echo a lot of the same messages, Hero Steam Center, because of the observatory.
Yep.
So if you check in on those two Facebook sites plus the heroessteam.org website, you'll be informed, you know. But if you want to get involved, I would imagine it's best to check the calendar on Heroes on the website. Under either Red Lodge Dark Skies and the Observatory are sharing a calendar. You could see when the next Red Lodge Dark Skies meeting is, and everybody's welcome to come to that. Gosh, we need more people on the Hero Steam Board too. And there's just so many ways to get involved. I've had the pleasure of, you know, just being up at the observatory, either shoveling or cleaning or putting something up, and Jeremy has as well. I know he's met people up there, and so between the two of us, I think we've had our share of people just showing such great interest in walking up. So as soon as we, I think we do have, well, we do have the calendar in order, and it's not 100% complete, but yes, the heroessteam.org would be the best source to understand, you know, what's happening and where to show up and when.
Okay, great. Thanks for running that and organizing that, Jeremy. Keeping us up to date. Is there anything else y'all would like to share today that I may have missed? Any topics we might not have covered that you'd like people to hear about?
Just remember to look up.
Yeah,
just remember.
There's a whole universe
up there. Keep looking up.
Keep looking up. Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for joining me today. It was great to meet with all of you together and hear your different perspectives. I really appreciate your time and appreciate what you're doing for Red Lodge Dark Skies. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And we're so happy you're part of our LDS.
I love doing it. Thank you. Well, folks, we hope you learned something from this today. Maybe it will encourage you to look at ways you can reduce light pollution in your life or inspire you to get involved. I love this topic because we hear so many doom and gloom conservation stories, but this is one we can actually do something about. The power is in our hands, and it's not as hard as it seems. Again, please check out Red Lodge Dark Skies Facebook page to get involved if you're in the area, or visit Dark Sky International website, which is darksky.org, to find a dark sky place near you. Every year, there's also International Dark Sky Week around the first week of April, so you can participate by spreading the word on the importance of dark skies, coming up to Red Lodge Dark Sky Observatory to appreciate the night sky, or help out with citizen science projects working to collect valuable data on our night skies, like Joanne mentioned. I will include a link to the information on International Dark Sky Week, as well as Red Lodge Dark Sky's Facebook page, citizen science opportunities, and other resources we mentioned in this podcast in our show notes. If you have ideas for topics for future episodes or questions about this episode, please email us at podcast@yellowstonewildlife.org. Thank you so much for listening. Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem is a production of the Yellowstone Wildlife Sanctuary in Red Lodge, Montana. If you would like to support them in this podcast or learn more about the Yellowstone Wildlife Sanctuary, please visit their website, yellowstonewildlifesanctuary.org. Our theme music was written and performed by local musician Justin Satterfield and recorded by Sean Keeney. We hope you'll join us next time for another episode of Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem.